sit down, boys. Have I got a treat for you?
Fighting the fight when it comes to technology. We are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the digital soup. We are the digital soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dave.
All right, guys, welcome back. This is episode 175 of Digital Soup. And no, it was not a joke last week. Jason is indeed gone. I'm usually Dave. Joining me, as per usual now, will be just me and Adam. Adam, you've been on an adventure this last week.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Adventure time.
Fill Las us Vegas. In. Yeah, hitting so, big Vegas. Yeah.
So I surprised my wife for her birthday and planned this entire trip to Las Vegas for us just to get out of cold, wintry Minnesota. And it went off without a hitch. We went with a couple of our best friends. And so we ended up staying for an extended weekend down in Vegas just to get out of the snow and check things out. So, yeah, it was quite enjoyable. It was the day we got down there, it was 70 and sunny. So it was t-shirts sitting outside and just absorbing some sunlight for once. It was
right.
Great. Well, ate a lot of stuff that we shouldn't have. But probably walked. We estimate about 24 miles between the 3 days.
Wow.
That's just not bad. Walking. So it was pretty darn sore by the end of it.
I bet. Now, there was one thing before we kind of talk about some of the cool stuff that you saw while you were there. I just needed to know, like, walk us through, because this is a pretty big surprise to keep from your wife, right?
Yep.
How did you set this up? And my wife asked me a question that we'll get to as you're talking about this.
All right.
And it stumped me, and I need to know how you pulled it off.
So okay, well,
walk us through it.
It started with a lot of planning well in advance. So my wife's not a big one for surprises and stuff like that and doesn't like being the spotlight of center of any attention like most people. So in that regard, I figured, well, let's maybe do a trip or something like that. So got everything paid for and bought last year, probably 7-8 months ago. And then in advance, I had my mom request time off to come visit, and she would actually end up, you know, staying at our house and taking care of the kids and the dog and everything for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I also reached out to my wife's boss and covertly got her the couple of days off that we needed to have off, and basically just kind of sprung it on her on Friday night and said, "We're going to be packing your bags. Got to leave at about 3 in the morning."
Okay.
That
makes sense then. The question I got was, how did he pack for his wife without her knowing and know that he packed the right stuff?
Oh, no. So my wife's best friend, I requested her to create for me a packing list that I could print off.
Uh-huh.
And so I gave my wife a suitcase for her birthday, and inside of that was a shirt and this packing list.
Oh, okay.
And I gave her enough time to pack before we had to leave. So we were just in a tizzy the evening.
I bet. Did she know at that point that where you were going, or just that you were going somewhere?
Yeah, to reduce the stress on her, I put a picture of the Vegas sign on the packing list. So
okay,
yeah, it was good.
That's awesome. Now, I know you told me, and you were tormenting me while you were out there, sending me photos of some amazing burgers.
Oh.
We always got to talk about food, you know?
Yep, we're going to talk about food today.
Yeah, right.
And ramen.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to know about the amazing food?
I do, yeah.
Okay, there's a couple really good places. We stayed at the Mandalay Bay. And there's a restaurant there called Citizens. It was pretty good. Went to the House of Blues down there. It was great. But we stayed. We didn't stay. We ate at Bobby's Burger Palace, and that is Bobby Flay's burger joint, and it was fantastic. Mm. Relatively inexpensive for Vegas, in comparison to other things, and
sure.
just a phenomenal, big, tasty burger with fries and this like fry sauce that is not what you would expect. It was great.
I know you were sending me those pictures, and I was at a basketball tournament for my daughter, and I'm like, looking at their kind of, you know, way long, too overheated Domino's pizza they were keeping warm for people to buy them, and just crusty looking. I'm like, ugh.
Like, how dare you send me these pics?
Dang it.
I should actually put the pictures in the show notes.
Yeah, go for it.
But so that was probably the best burger. And then, of course, we had to hit – Vegas is famous for buffets.
Yeah.
So we went over to the Bellagio, and we checked out the buffet there. And, man, did I ever need to get wheelchaired out of there. It was just brutal. I was like, I'm getting my $50 worth.
Oh, so
I go and grab another plate. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? But I mean, everything from their pizza, their pasta, their seafood. I tried some new stuff. I tried paella, and you know, that creme brulee. They had all kinds of just. What really shocked me was just how much excess there is of everything.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, man, what are the shipping lanes like to get to Vegas? Because the place is just massive, and there's all this just like over excess of everything down there. It's crazy. Man. So,
You mentioned to me this fry sauce, so you couldn't pinpoint what it was.
That's right.
I found it for you.
Okay.
This is on the. I know you're not on Facebook, but this is the Bobby's Burger Palace fry sauce recipe. It's a half cup of prepared mayo, one small red pepper, roasted, peeled, seeded, and diced, one chipotle chili in adobo, salt, and freshly ground black pepper. Combine them all in a food processor, process until smooth, transfer to a bowl, cover, and refrigerate for at least an hour to allow the flavors to meld. That's it, man.
Hold on. I got to take a screenshot.
I sent you the link there.
I see that. Oh my gosh,
that's all. It's got
to
be
that chipotle chili is what that flavor was that I couldn't pinpoint.
Yeah, yeah. I had to look it up because you were telling me about it earlier, and I was like, God, I wonder what that is. I love a good fry sauce.
Most often, fry sauce is like a mix of mayonnaise and ketchup.
Yep, and this has
that's what it looked like when it came. I'm like, oh, okay, this will be good. I like that kind of stuff. I'm like, whoa. What is this? It's awesome. I didn't get enough of it.
Yeah.
So there. Thank you for sharing that. I'll have to try to make that. So there was the buffet, of course.
Yeah.
But the real gem, besides Bobby's Burger Palace,
right?
David Chen has a restaurant called Momofuku,
mm-hmm.
and this is home of what I consider to be the best ramen noodles on the planet. Mm. And I've got some pictures of that too. But it's like,
yeah.
Their shoyu pork ramen, it's like braised pork belly and pork and all these onions and a poached egg. And, oh my gosh. Oh. I was just living the dream. So actual ramen.
You even got to wish to be big.
Oh, that's right. I found a Zoltar machine out there. I wish I was big. But
awesome,
it was a great break and good vacation for the wife and a nice surprise for her. So happy birthday, honey.
Right. And happy birthday. Take me on vacation.
Yep.
No, it works out though. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it sounded like a great, great weekend. Yep. Well-deserved getaway there.
I can wait a few years to go back.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of in this weird spot, like out in, I typically have no desire whatsoever to go on vacation to any large city anywhere
where there's tons and tons of people.
Right. I would much rather take a road trip through small town, USA, just taking photos, exploring, you know, the non-massive cities.
Like Togo.
Yeah. Togo, you know, yeah,
maybe Mackinac,
the bay. Yeah. People have no idea what that is, but look it up on a map.
It's in Minnesota, but you won't see much even with Google.
Yep. Nevis. You know, places like that. But
what about Schroeder?
Yeah, right.
That's actually picturesque, I think.
Yep.
But here we are again, second episode talking about food.
Right. Well, that's all right because, you know, for me, I know Vegas, you're telling me about this and you're like, we got to go and just tour the food. I'd be down for that. I could skip a lot of Vegas, but the food would be something to see. And I know there's a lot of really awesome stuff just outside of Vegas to see as far as landscape type stuff too. Cause our friend Vincent from Because We Make just got back from a trip there, I think 2 weeks ago, something like that.
Nah.
And he was out. He didn't spend hardly any time at all in Vegas proper. They were out exploring the countryside.
Nice.
And, you know, exploring like these old ghost towns and just the
that's off the beaten path stuff.
Yeah, painted rocks and you know, Joshua Tree type areas, you know, all that stuff. And just beautiful. He got some beautiful photographs out there. And so that kind of thing would be all right. Mix some food with that. We're all right. And New York City, I've never wanted to go there, but man, I just keep making friends, you know, online through podcasting and photography that are in New York. So me, going to New York City would be kind of a, hey, let me go catch up with some friends and meet them in person finally, you know, one of those kind of deals. But
yep.
But speaking of the ramen.
Yeah.
Why don't we hit some ramen, get some quick rapid fire news out of the way. Again, no timers, just short news stories here. Give you something else to think about before we get into the main topic.
Yeah, give us our first story there, Dave. I talked enough about
Sure. Well, I've got a couple stories and we'll kind of tackle them in separate parts here. But Instagram has rolled out a new feature that I don't know what to think of this. They're saying that it's basically making it easier for you to kind of weed out or cull out those boring accounts. And what it is, you go, it's kind of a weird way to approach this, but it actually is kind of nice because with all social media, you know, you end up where at some point in time someone follows you or you see something cool that someone posted and then you follow it, but you're not really that interested in, you know, a year later what they're doing. And what they've done is you go in on your profile page and you click your following button. And it gives you two new categories. One says the least interacted with accounts, and one is a category of the most shown in your feed, which is kind of cool. You can just at a glance see which people or profiles or whatever it is that you follow that you see most in your feed, that you interact with the most. And you can look through the least interacted ones, which their idea is it helps you get rid of the accounts that you don't interact with at all, you know, and just kind of purge out some of those. And it seems kind of cold, but at the same time, if you're not interacting with them, you know, it's kind of not really no reason to follow them, I guess, anymore, really.
Right.
It's kind of a weird thing, though, because when you really think about it, a lot of these, like I look through mine, and a lot of the people on my least interacted with are personal friends and people I know. And it's not that I avoid interacting with them or scroll past. It's just that, you know, Instagram's stupid algorithms don't feed their stuff up for some reason.
Right.
So it's so
is this
weird.
An option that you can shut off?
Well, you don't have to do anything with it.
Oh, okay.
It's only there if you go in and look at it. And then you can choose once you look at that list, like, oh, I want to keep that one. Or, oh, yeah, that one. I don't need to follow that anymore. And, you know, you can just kind of go through it and do it that way.
I can see that being useful if you've, you know, you follow 1,000, you know, different people on Instagram and it's like, well, that's a bit much.
Right. Well, and you know, the other way, and I've done this recently even, and we've all been there where you see some cool company that's got a giveaway going, you know, and all you got to do to enter is just simply follow them and share, you know.
Yep.
And you do that and then you forget about it. And then 6 months later, you're wondering why you're seeing all these weird posts from some company or some, you know, something. And here you can go in and you'll find those people in that list also. So it makes it easy to get rid of some of that stuff if you don't want to keep it around. And kind of just a weird, interesting feature that I don't know. The way they say making it easier to follow, unfollow boring accounts, just because they're not showing up in your feed doesn't necessarily mean to me that it's a boring account. You know, keeping in mind, it's a healthy dose of what the algorithm there is going to show you, but it does show you the ones that you interact with the most and the least, which you could also use if you see people that just are on that least interacted list, but they're accounts that you really like. It could be worth, you know, that way you have a notification of some sort to say, oh, I need to make a point to go check out their stuff more, interact with them more also. So,
sure.
Just some new tools there.
Nice. Hey, we were talking about travel earlier, and Nintendo is opening up a pop-up gameplay lounge at a few major airports. So, according to Fortune.com, they're aiming to make travel a little bit more uplifting this spring. So they're going to be opening up what they call pop-up gaming lounges at four of the major airports, allowing passengers to pass the time before boarding playing some of the biggest games on Nintendo Switch. So these kiosks, which will have several Switches available, are going to be open at Dulles in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, O'Hare, and a fourth location at Dallas's Love Field in February, from February 13th through March 26th. So I think these are all like short term. Maybe they're trying this out.
Yeah, well, my take is they're just looking. They're going to pop up just like any other like pop up food place or whatever else.
Yeah, it's a kiosk. It's not like a permanent fixture to the airport.
Yep, just going to pop up around different airports, different places randomly, and yep. kind of like a traveling arcade.
Yeah, so they're going to include Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Super Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Party, and Tetris 99. And the travelers who take time to actually play will get a free Nintendo Switch luggage handle wrap.
Ooh!
And a $10 coupon from Target for Nintendo purchases over $75. Plus, directly from the lounges there, they'll be able to order a Switch if they want and then select software and Nintendo merchandise. Hmm. So they're kind of using it as a little bit of a marketing tool a lot of times. And I mean, it's an interesting idea because, you know, they say now you need to be at the airport 2 hours in advance to get on a flight.
And more often than not, some time.
Yeah, it's you're always there at least an hour, hour and a half, and sometimes 2-3 hours.
Right.
And if I can get through a few levels, kill time that way, and maybe for people that have never had the opportunity to play,
right?
You know, they might go, "Oh, this is actually quite awesome. I'll just order one."
Yep.
That'd be interesting. That's kind of cool.
Well, and the only thing that I in listening to that news that I don't understand. All the games make sense because almost all of those games are the type that you can jump in, play a little bit, and walk away from.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Just walk away.
Yeah. Why is Zelda Breath of the Wild there? Because what are you going to do? People are going to play through 20 minutes, maybe even an hour of this game, and just start getting going on this big open world role player and then be done.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, that might be a way to hook people to be like, oh, this game was amazing.
Well, that's exactly why they're doing it. If the game's that awesome, I've never played it.
Yeah.
But if it's that awesome and you put an hour into it and you're like, oh no, now I have to fly. You know what? I can wait for the next flight. Or
here's my credit card
so you can have it at home.
Yeah.
Yep. Can I just take this with me? It's got my save game on it.
Yeah. Right. Nope. Start over. Nice. Well, back to Instagram. This is just kind of a funny story. Now, I know you're not super familiar with Instagram, but in Instagram stories, they have all these filters, much like Snapchat, where you can do all kinds of different things. But some of the popular ones lately are that you'll take a video of yourself and you can have it tell you, it'll put this little box over your head kind of and mm-hmm. say, which Disney character are you? Or which of the Friends cast do you most resemble? Things like that. Well, the latest one, which is kind of actually hilarious, is the how old do I look filter. And apparently it'll look at your face and you know, spit out a number, say, oh, you look like you're how old? Whatever. Well, apparently there was a 36-year-old, she's a British singer and television personality named Cheryl, who I guess her full name is Cheryl Ann Tweedy. I don't know who she is, but she gave it a spin on her feed and, you know, everyone got to watch this and she apparently, it said she was 11 years older than she was. It told her she looked like she was 47 years old at 36 and she was not happy about this. And so apparently this is one of those fun filters that is kind of, people are curious. They're checking it out. They want to see that, you know, thinking it's going to be all fun until they get told they look much older than they really are potentially. And then they're getting mad.
So, I've seen a few of those where it's like, which Disney character are you?
Yeah. I've never played with them.
Yeah. You can't trust these technological AI robots.
Right. Right. I mean, we all know that the Disney character that I most closely resemble is the villain in Bambi. You know, I'm the hunter.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, do you hear they're making a live action remake of Bambi?
Real, what?
That's supposed to be their next, you know, like they did with The Lion King. So live action in quotes where it'll be CGI animals basically that look real. Apparently that's the next big Disney live action.
Hmm.
That's okay. Pretty stupid. But yeah. I don't know. It's kind of weird, but.
Oh, well, let's see if it's, if they, let's see how good they do. Every, I've never seen ever good CGI deer.
No.
Ever.
Nope.
Ever.
Nope. Never, ever, ever.
If, have you ever seen, I Am Legend?
Yeah.
CGI deer.
Yep.
Terrible. Just terrible.
I wonder if the, that small deer we saw at the beginning of The Witcher, I wonder if that was CGI or if that was real.
Probably. That, I don't remember.
That opening scene when he's fighting that, the, in the very first episode, he's fighting that swamp monster, and it starts and it's just this deer in a swamp drinking water or whatever.
Probably CGI.
Probably. I didn't get too good of a look at it, but yeah. Hard to say.
Yep. It's hard to do deer and maybe birds. Birds of prey.
Yeah, right.
That's my segue, folks. The internet is having a field day with Birds of Prey title change, according to Cinema Blend. And so the title of this, of this Harley Quinn movie is just Birds of Prey. But apparently some theaters are actually putting on their, on their displays Harley Quinn, colon, Birds of Prey.
Well, the full title, the actual full title of the movie is actually Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. So that's
is it really?
Yeah, that's the actual title of the movie.
That's crap.
Yeah. and they changed it now where it's showing, like you said, Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey.
Well, according to Twitter user Superman81, WB should really change their name to We Effed Up Not Marketing This as a Solo Harley Quinn Movie and Introducing the Birds of Prey. So now we have to change the title so people know what it's really about. Well, so, Birds of Prey, who cares, guys?
Yeah.
The internet, calm down. There's other things to be upset about than how you're naming this movie.
Yeah.
And so apparently the opening weekend wasn't a good one. It only grossed $35 million domestically. Warner Brothers was hoping for about $45 million. So, but we'll see. Maybe word of mouth will get around if it's any good. I have my doubts.
Well, I'll tell you this. I've been talking with, speaking of our friend Vincent, him and I have been chatting a little bit. And, you know, everything he keeps telling me, this movie's, you know, I kind of want to see it to see how much of a train wreck it is. And, oh, he's laughing, you know, because they changed the name now. Well, in reality, they didn't actually change the name of the film. All that happened is a lot of theaters and your seating apps and some of that stuff, you know, where you can order your tickets and stuff. They shortened the name to make it supposedly, according to WB, their announcement on it was that they basically just changed it for those apps and things like that to make it more SEO friendly. They haven't actually officially changed the title of the movie.
It's just the theaters using it for name recognition.
Right. And the interesting thing is, though, and I was telling Vincent this, because everything he's seen is that it, you know, it's a train wreck, and you're seeing that all over the internet of people looking at the box office saying, oh, it did bad in the box office. This movie sucks. And it's, you know, it's supposed to be terrible. Everyone, that's just spreading, like we talked about before, with the, you know, the buzz that's created online, telling everyone how bad something is before people have actually seen it, even, you know. But I have seen so many people talking about this, people whose opinions I trust, from podcasters and other people on Twitter and social media, that have said that I've actually gone to see it and said, you know what, the movie is actually very fun.
All right.
They say it's full of some very violent action, because it is, I believe, rated R, and some excellent action. The guys that did the fight choreography for John Wick did the fights in this. So they say the fight scenes are actually really good. All the violence, all that stuff is pretty amazing.
Amazing violence.
Yeah. And they said, though, the storylines, they did an excellent job really capturing the characters from the comic books.
Hey, so, DC, apparently when you concentrate on a character, you do better.
Right.
Yeah, according to Rotten Tomatoes, which... They are at 80%, but so is the audience.
Yeah.
So for once, they are like directly in line with each other. Maybe it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know what? I guarantee it. Like you said, SEO. Somebody's like, I can't find that Harley Quinn movie. I don't know what it's called. They type in Harley Quinn, it doesn't show up.
Or people are seeing this big, giant, long title in the theater or on the website going, what is this? I don't know what that is. Not realizing, oh, that's that Harley Quinn movie I wanted to see, you know?
Yep, exactly. So,
I think this is a case where this film is getting the internet buzz that's hurting it at the box office.
Ah, well, if it's good, check it out.
Yep.
Speaking of checking things out that are good, I think it might be time for some Digital Soup recommendations.
Digital Soup recommendations.
So my recommendation today is a YouTube channel called Odd Tinkering. Now, I've only watched a handful of the videos here, but it is fascinating. If you're somebody that is fascinated by old things that are dilapidated and look like they should be thrown away, getting completely restored into awesome condition, check this channel out. So they've got about 639,000 subscribers already. So it's not like they're a no-name channel here. But the one that caught my eye was they restored a $2 eBay junk Game Boy Color. And the process they went through to restore this thing was beyond amazing.
Right.
Like, this person has resources to stuff.
Yeah.
And they also have skill to do it. So I've watched that one, which is highly technical.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched them turn an old rusty hammer into a Mjolnir-like tool where they're using a forge.
Yeah.
I mean, they do all this crazy stuff, and it's just fantastically, you know, well-recorded, concise. And, you know, a lot of the videos are 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Actually, in YouTube, I double the speed, and I just watch them do it really quick.
Right.
So because I kinda cheat.
He's basically, he's not talking. He's putting subtitles up on the screen anyways and just showing his hands working. And so, yeah, you could double speed that, and I didn't even think of that, but...
Yeah, so it's great. Tons and tons of videos, and it's one of those video series that's really satisfying to watch.
Yeah.
So especially when he gets some of this vintage stuff. I mean, like, old lighters and and stuff like that.
Well,
he just has tools and know-how. Go ahead.
Yeah, just that Game Boy Color one. I mean, to speak to the level. I mean, this wasn't just like, oh, let me just clean this up and, you know, polish it up. This was literally taking every single bit of it apart. Adding wiring onto the circuit board because the power wasn't working.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing some pretty crazy tricks to, because that Game Boy Color had that translucent case, and this was all yellowed. And it was funny at one point in the video. It was says,
all yellow.
Yeah, he's like, this is all this grimy showing close up. This is all the sweat from some Japanese kid's hands. It's just gross, you know. But
he sourced like brand new replacement buttons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, one I have not watched yet. He's got another one restoring the original Game Boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he put up about 10 months ago. It's got over 4 million views. I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yeah. I mean, just tons of different restorations. And it makes you think, like, you look at this and it makes me want to try it.
Yep.
You're a maker, simple stuff, hand tools, you know, whatever.
You can actually learn from this channel by watching it. Like, wow, there's some skill to it. So definitely check it out. It's called Odd Tinkering. I'm going to have the link to this in the show notes. So you can click right on it, as well as the link to the stories that we just talked about. So be sure to check that out. So Dave, what is your recommendation today?
Well, I'm going to go kind of a service, something I've used a little bit. You have a little bit of experience with this as well. And it's a company called Sticker Mule.
Mjolnir?
Yeah, Sticker Mule. No, what it is, Sticker Mule is a company where you can get not just custom stickers made if you're looking to do something, but I mean, tons of different types of stickers, labels. You can do magnets, like buttons, you know, packaging, all kinds of stuff, and just tons of different products. They are super high quality. And not only that, but some of the other stuff, like they actually have, they sell like coasters and big wall graphics, like acrylic charms. And oddly, they sell a hot sauce. It's called Mule Sauce that I hear. I need to order some because I hear that it's actually very tasty. $8 for a bottle of Mule Sauce. And, you know, this company, though, Sticker Mule, I took advantage of a promo code I saw where it was like 10 stickers for a dollar or something. And I tried it out. I got some Adventures in Creativity stickers made.
Yep. And I followed suit.
Yep. And you took advantage of that with your yesterday's sci-fi. And then I also ordered from Vistaprint. And I got to say, Sticker Mule's quality, Vistaprint wasn't bad. But Sticker Mule just really has an extra level of feeling of quality. And...
Yes, agreed.
And then I entered some, you know, speaking of entering giveaways earlier, they do what they call Mule Mondays on Twitter and Facebook and everything. And all you got to do to enter is just retweet and follow or whatever. And I ended up winning a set of a roll of 50, like I think they're 3x3 inch label stickers, like for packaging labels or whatever else. Amazing quality, you know, as high quality as the stickers were. And so in looking at this, if you want to get just for fun, or if you want merch for something you're doing, or you have an event or whatever it might be, check them out. And, you know, they've got super, super good quality. Prices are actually pretty reasonable, and they're constantly running deals. So you can just keep an eye on it and take advantage of some deals. Like this week, they're calling it Sticker Week. Every day they've got a different deal. So nice. Stuff like that. And you can even check out the hot sauce. Added bonus for you, the link I've got in the show notes for you. It does give you a $10 credit.
Jeez.
Which is kind of cool. And so you can take $10 off your order, and that is courtesy of just from me, because I've been a customer with them, and they give me this thing where I can give you a $10 credit.
Oh, that's nice.
And so, yeah, we're going to stick that in there for you as well, and so it's $10 off $10 order or more.
We're not sponsored by them.
No.
We've just used them, and they do have a really good quality product. So, very cool. Very cool. Hopefully that'll stick around.
I need to try this hot sauce is what I need to try.
I kind of want to try it. You know, it says that it's grown from chilies that are from New Zealand.
Really?
Is what it says.
That's cool.
And it's actually got a blend of habanero, yellow scotch bonnet, and boot jolokia peppers. I don't know what any of that is, but it sounds good.
What's funny is that when I got my stickers from this company, my dad was looking at it, and I said, yeah, it's weird. They even have hot sauce. I said, they call it mule sauce. He's like, mule sauce? He watches a ton of like grilling and cooking stuff on YouTube, and he's got a Traeger grill and smoker. Nice. And so he's seen the hot sauce show up before, you know, on these cooking places and barbecue things and stuff like that. People say it's really good.
Yeah, it's got good reviews according to the stickermule.com.
Yeah. Well,
they don't put the bad ones up, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there, if you want a fun, I mean, it's a company, they're selling stickers, but if you want just a fun Twitter follow the Sticker Mule account, because A, you can enter their contest and you may win some stuff, which is cool. B, they give you deals all the time. And C, they just have these hilarious tweets. You know, it's a lot of times they just put out random funny stuff. And it's just, it's kind of like when Wendy's, I think, does they're known for having a pretty savage Twitter account, you know, kind of that same thing where they'll say all kinds of fun stuff, but definitely worth checking out.
Huh. You know what else is worth checking out? We should be checking out the impact of technology on today's kids.
Oof.
So this is going to be kind of our main topic today. We started brainstorming on what we should talk about. And one of the things that is always a good topic, especially if you're a parent, is the impact of technology on our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been scientific studies going on. We see a difference in kids, you know, especially compared to our own childhoods. And I think that's just something we wanted to touch base on, because we're always talking about technology and trying to stay safe as adults. And once in a while, we'll talk about keeping your kids safe online and stuff like that. But overall, you know, there's obviously a huge impact of technology on kids. They're given iPads at school, or, you know, a Chromebook, not even using real books anymore. They're being given devices earlier and earlier, younger and younger. And, you know, it's a different world than it used to be back like in the 90s when we grew up.
For sure. It's tough because there's so many ways to tackle this topic too. I mean, you know, just even the comparison between something simple, like when we were kids in school, if we had to write a paper, what did we do? You know, we went to the library, we looked at an encyclopedia, whatever it might be. Now they just scroll on their phone and search Google or Wikipedia or whatever else and, you know, get their information. That just the instant access, the difference there even is mind-blowing.
Yep. And people use Wikipedia all the time. And honestly, it's a good resource, but it's also editable by anybody.
Right.
So keep that in mind, folks.
Yeah.
Not to mention, this is just a little healthy tip for college kids and high school students who probably aren't listening anyway. But if you're going to plagiarize, good luck plagiarizing off the internet. There, your instructors have tools to be able to paste your text in and tell if it's been plagiarized from somewhere else. So,
well, yeah, I mean,
try to do as much of your own work as you can.
Exactly. It's wild, though.
Yep.
I mean, where do you want to, what angle, where do you want to kind of start with this? Like, I know we had talked a little pre-show, kind of, this might be one of those high-level kind of introductions to the topic that we'll tackle in more detail in specific areas later. But
sure. I think a good place to start, and feel free to disagree with me on this, but starting off from when should I get my child a device?
Wrong. I disagree.
Oh, okay, good.
No, I'm
good.
Just kidding.
That's really the gateway. It's not their introduction to technology, because as a parent, you know, your kid might not have a phone, but you're always, I've seen parents like trying to get their kid quiet and they'll just shove an iPad in front of their face at a restaurant. Like, here, watch this.
Oh,
and the kid's just staring at it.
Yeah. You've seen it when kids are in a store, in a shopping cart, the kid can't even talk. Maybe, you know, 2 year and a half old, you know, something like that. And now it's keeping quiet, keep them entertained, stuff, a phone in their hands, you know.
It's a technological pacifier.
Yeah.
And is it actually appropriate to do, or are we training our kids to act out if they want technology?
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the questions. And nothing, and the correlation back to like when we were kids, in my opinion, is, you know, people that would plant their kid in front of the TV and let the TV be the babysitter.
Right.
That was a screen. There was entertainment. There was lights. There was sounds. There was colors.
Right.
And it's the same concept, only now we have the added bonus of it's interactive. So while it can also be used as an awesome like interaction tool, you're increasing hand-eye coordination.
Right.
You can get them educational games and stuff. You know, a lot of really big positives come with it. But then the big negatives, too, is that now it's even more convenient for you to hand a device to your child to get them to be quiet or to get them out of your hair. And it's about, you know, this all comes back to that whole parenting question. Everyone's got their own parenting style. And we're not here on Digital Soup to preach, you know, this is how you need to parent.
Right.
But be mindful. You've got to be mindful of what you're handing your kids, no matter what it is, whether it's technology or whether it's a you know, something that they're eating. You got to know what you're giving them. And a lot of times, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, finish your thought there, because I'm going to ask you a question that will lead to something.
Yep. And my thought is going to kind of segue into YouTube.
Okay. So, let me, before we get to the YouTube,
go ahead.
Let me ask you, you mentioned, you know, the appropriate age. For you, what do you think? Where do you sit on that?
Well, so my oldest, I always thought, you know, they're not going to need a phone or a device until they're 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
I never even had one as a kid, you know, neither did you. That was accessible.
I had the old bag phone. You remember those?
Oh,
the analog
Zach Moore.
Well,
we got Zach Morris over here.
No. It was my dad worked in the mines, and part of the plan that the mine he worked at had was they were able to get, I think, two of these per family.
Okay.
And but so we got it through them, but they were like, and they were literally like an old regular phone. They were analog, but you could take them with you.
The only thing you could do with it is call.
Yep. That's it. It was just it was giant, like the size of a football we called it a bag phone, because it literally was inside. There was a giant battery and
you got to put the antenna on the roof.
Yeah. Well, no antenna on the roof. It had one that you'd flip up, but they didn't get hardly any signal, and they were, you know, they had a cord attached to this base that you'd sit it on the seat next to you if you had to make a call in an emergency. That's all it was for.
So most kids didn't have that.
No.
You're an exception on that front.
We didn't get that till I was like 16, 17.
Okay. But even then, that's just a phone.
Right.
Phone only. You can't text. You can't look at anything. There's no internet access, nothing. You can make a call, but you have to know the number or else have it on speed dial. That's it.
Right.
So contrast that with right now when you hand a kid a phone, and I'm doing air quotes for those that can't see. A smartphone is a full-blown computer device. Obviously, you all know that. There's apps, it's connected online. And if you don't know what your kids are watching on it when you hand it to them, you know, there is a potential for them to be, you know, harmed by it. And I don't mean physically harmed, but I mean, like, mentally, you know, what are they taking in? What are they seeing on this stuff?
Yeah.
And the reason I was going to bring up YouTube for kids and stuff like that, a lot of parents have YouTube for Kids app. It's supposed to be safe. It's like, oh, finally something I can trust. And you just hand it to them. Are you familiar with ElsaGate?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what that is.
I've heard it, yeah.
So listeners, if you're not familiar with it, ElsaGate was this big controversy around YouTube and YouTube Kids with videos that were considered child-friendly, but actually contained stuff that was inappropriate for kids. And this kind of peaked a couple of years ago, like 2017. But I remember my kids, back when I, you know, when they would watch YouTube, we'd still be in the room with them. And they would hit play and it would autoplay the next video and autoplay the next video. And YouTube's algorithm, which would be, you know, grabbing different titles and different content when people upload their videos, they tag them and everything like that. And, you know, there's some different videos showing that, you know, 10 videos in, you're now looking at crazy content with people getting their eyes stabbed out and stuff like that.
Right.
And you don't even know it. And the reason they call it ElsaGate was because a lot of these, you know, supposedly child-friendly videos were tagged with stuff like Elsa and Spider-Man and all this other stuff. And they actually had violence and sexual situations and fetishes and drugs and alcohol and toilet humor and stuff like that, that most people, if they caught their kid looking at it, would be like, what the hell is this?
Right.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, even though it says YouTube Kids, people were getting around this through the different tags and things that they could put in their videos. And often these were like a foreign, you know, some kind of foreign person who came up with the videos or a video series. They got a bunch of actors and it's like, for example, you know, Frozen Elsa gets chicken feet, or Frozen Elsa and Anna tear Spider-Man apart, and Evil Santa kidnaps Frozen Elsa and Spider-Man. And, a lot of this stuff was like twisted stuff. Right. Some of the videos showing Elsa giving birth, and some of them Spider-Man's injecting Elsa with a brightly colored liquid. There's a lot of potential like pedophilia stuff on here, like with babies getting their butts injected with things.
Ugh.
And like Peppa Pig and all these characters that you think are safe for your kids, they're not.
Yeah.
Not at all. And YouTube's tried to make a lot of, you know, waves to shut a lot of this stuff off and dismantle some of it. But some of the stuff is still out there and it's still searchable. And if your kid's into Frozen, you know, there's these sick freaks out there that are taking advantage of that.
Sure.
And they're doing it to make money. A lot of these videos have, you know, 3 million hits. They're getting ads played on them. But a lot of it is like completely inappropriate stuff that if you don't know about it, you know, it's really disturbing. There's stuff of like these like Mickey Mouse and other Disney characters getting stabbed and getting their eyes ripped out and stuff like that. It's just, there's gory stuff, frightening scenes with monsters and blood and really dark, dark stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this was stuff that was 12 videos in on an autoplay playlists in some of these YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So that's just a start.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, that's great. And I'm not trying to scare people. Just be aware of what your kids are looking at. Now, I don't know what the status of this stuff is now, but as of 2017, you know, that's really when it came out. A lot of the channels were called like Super Cartoons and Super this and that, Super Kids stuff.
You know what else, you know, in that same vein, you see a lot of people that stream games, you know, and then they put the video up on YouTube with their game stream, you know, after the fact so people can watch it. Very common. And a lot of them get marked as safe for children. So they show up in the children's videos, you know, on YouTube for kids and everything else, just because it's a game that's, you know, Farming Simulator 2019. Well, that's safe for all ages. And then you start watching some of these videos and you realize like, it's a stream going and there's, you know, two or three dudes on there and they're, you know, playing the game, doing whatever, but the conversations they're having around this and like these stories they're making up are completely inappropriate, you know, talking about, you know, smuggling drugs and doing this. Oh, we got to make a meth run down to the so-and-so's farm across the way. And, you know, something that's not actually in the game.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, so in November of 2017, YouTube announced that it deleted over 50 channels and thousands of videos that didn't fit their new guidelines. So it had terminated more than 270 accounts, removed over 150,000 videos, turned off comments to like almost 750,000 videos that were targeted by child predators.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these are like, you know, this is also letting your kid be on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
try not to do that, in my opinion, right. Because they found when people are investigating this stuff and looking into it, a lot of actual children who sometimes, you know,
sure,
would make a video or anything, yep, there'd be strange, like creepy comments, you know, from people that started watching them.
Yeah.
And if your kids can see those comments and respond, I mean,
yeah. Yikes. Well, and it's tough enough because any social media, typically, what do they say? You have to be at least, what, 13 for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that age, now a lot of parents don't care and they're setting their 7-year olds up with an account and just lying about the age. Okay. Yep. That's on the parent. You know, there's a reason those ages are there, but even at 13, when you think of a 13-year-old, if they're going to do a YouTube channel, for instance, what are they filming? It's their personal lives in their house, in your home, yep, all this stuff. Well, you're basically giving people, if they are shady or, you know, pedophiles or who knows what, they can see everything about your house. They know, you know, the routines. They, oh, there's windows over there in this kid's bedroom. I can get in there. Or there's this and there's that. Yeah. And they can put all this stuff together and gather all the information they need that when they reach out and pretend to be somebody that, oh, the kid, you know, they reach out to talk to this kid and start getting, you know, oh, you know me. We met, blah, 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 you know.
Start grooming them.
Yeah, they groom them, and suddenly they're also collecting all this data. So when the kid's like, I don't know you, they can answer questions about them that the kid's not going to think, oh, I just shared that in my video. They're going to think that's something only a friend would know, you know, and trick them. It's terrifying.
And I don't know why our conversation, you know, went quite in this direction, but and we're not trying to frighten people,
no,
but make you aware of some of the stuff that's happening. What you're saying is exactly right. And it's the same reason that you generally don't want to say, you know, where you are at any given time on social media, because, and this is even as an adult, if I say, oh, me and my whole family are over in Wisconsin Dells, we're having an awesome time.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, you know, that follows me now knows that my house is unwatched or empty.
Right.
You know, it's that whole thing.
Yeah.
But what you're saying makes perfect sense. And it also applies to TikTok, Instagram, you know, Snapchat, any of these apps that almost every kid has. And you know what, this goes back to, you know, my oldest was 12 when I gave her the device.
Mm-hmm.
All of the friends have it already.
Yeah.
You know, and they all have like TikTok accounts now and Snapchat, and I don't allow any of it for all of these reasons we've been talking about.
Yeah. I know my daughter she's turning 11. We've always told her bare minimum is going to be 12 years old.
Yep.
You know, and you know, she's like, I want a phone. 'Cause all of her friends have phones. And like I said, they're all on the apps and everything else. And I told her, I said, you don't want a phone. What you want is the apps. And I said, even when you get a phone, you are not getting those apps, you know, and now she's in sports and doing all kinds of stuff like that, where there are times it would be convenient for her to have a cell phone so, you know, she can reach out to us after school, you know.
Get whatever. Her a sweet flip phone.
She'd yeah, and it. That's what I'm
That'd be like embarrassing,
her.
Dad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling her, you know, if I get you a phone, it's going to be something like that. There'll be no apps. It'll be locked down. You'll have access to the phone and text messaging. That'll be it.
So similar to kind of when we talked about kids before,
mm-hmm,
having conversations with your kids and making sure they understand what the boundaries are with technology, including a phone, is really, really important, because they need to know that your rules are in place for their protection, not because you're trying to be, you know, a nasty person. You know, if you use an app like NetNanny or anything like that to monitor or restrict your child's screen time, which is actually a really good idea, in my opinion, you have to have that conversation with them that, you know what, I need you to be able to focus on your studies. I need you to be able to you know, not be on a phone all day long when the sun's shining outside. I need you to be physically active. I want you to play with your cousins, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
And I don't want you to be exposed to stuff that, you know, quite honestly, apps and the internet open wide up. Like you can accidentally get to porn in two clicks.
Yep.
I don't want any of that to happen to you. So
I'm
putting these restrictions in place for your own protection.
For me, I look at it from the creativity standpoint, the imagination, the brain standpoint. You know, for us as kids, we may have had television, and as we got a little older, we had, you know, like Nintendo or Super Nintendo.
And we weren't allowed to watch rated R movies.
Yeah, right.
Didn't mean we didn't. You know,
I don't know about you, but I was, my parents would not let me sit all day and play on the Nintendo. I mean, there were some exceptions if it was, you know, 45 below outside, or even then I couldn't just sit all day. They'd have, I'd have chores to do in the house, and they'd want me to read books or find something else to do. And I look at the fact that these kids at such a young age, like you said, when they're real little, even if it's not their own device, they're handed a tablet, they're handed a video game system. I mean, I've got a kid that's my youngest age. My youngest is 7 years old. This kid already is playing on, you know, he's had the Xbox 360. He now has the Xbox One and a PS4. And I'm like, geez, I'm 40, almost 42. I can't have a new system yet. Why, you know,
my son's like, I want you to buy this Nintendo.
Yeah, I was like, no, you're not getting one if I don't get one.
Exactly.
But the thing is, like, this kid's parents, they don't care. Like you had mentioned, you know, you knew someone that was in that situation, and they're letting this kid play games like GTA 5, Grand Theft Auto 5, and I knew the game was bad, and recently Jason, you know, there's a Steam sale, and he convinced you and I to pick it up so that
we both got it.
Yeah, so we can maybe play, hook up and play some online gaming together. And
it
I'll tell you
not
what,
for kids.
No, in the first 15 minutes of the game, I heard probably 25 F-bombs dropped, racial slurs, you know, sexual innuendo, all this stuff. Well, and I'm like,
opening, you know, is you have to kill the cops.
Right. It's like, and this is, they're letting a 7 year old play this stuff. And I'm like,
no, exactly.
Yeah. There's a problem with that to me.
Yep. Well, it kind of goes back to, and when we talked about this before with video games,
right,
our big video game discussion, is your child, you know, mentally mature enough to handle the stuff that you're handing them?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know what you're handing them, then you have no idea the answer to that question.
Right.
If you don't know the answer to that question, don't hand them something that you are questioning, you know, that seems that, you know, questionable.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the ElsaGate stuff, there was a pediatrics professor, Michael Rich, and he stated the videos were potentially harmful to children who could find them even more upsetting because it's characters they thought they knew and trusted showing improper or violent behavior. And, you know, there's also been studies shown on how much screen time is good, you know, for kids, or I shouldn't say good for kids, but is screen time altering the brains of children?
Right.
I guess that's the question. And according to Healthline Parenthood, early results from a big study suggest that screen time might actually impact children's brains and learning. So this is kind of, this is very topical here because this entire generation of kids is growing up with smartphones and tablets and all this other internet enabled devices. And a lot of parents like us are worried and concerned, you know, does this have an impact on the actual development of the brain? So the National Institute of Health actually has a little glimpse to the answer based on data that they collected for the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, the ABCD study. This study shows more than 11,000 9 and 10 year olds at 21 sites throughout the US. And the results were presented in December on 60 Minutes. And was that December of this year? This was December of 2018 that this study actually came out. So the big takeaways from the initial data, MRI scans found significant differences in the brains of some children who reported using smartphones, tablets, and video games more than 7 hours a day. And children who reported more than 2 hours a day of screen time got lower scores on thinking and language tests.
Yep.
So there is something there, possibly. It would be interesting to see kind of the final results of this, because this was their preliminary glance at the data. And it's really important when you look at data to decipher between causality, you know, causation and correlation.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
well, it's something I had a friend of mine, former bandmate, was a high school teacher. And he and I talked about this many, many years ago when I had just had, my wife just had our first child. And we were talking about stuff with electronics and phones and tablets, all this stuff. And even in schools where they're introducing kids at such a young age to computers and things like that. Now, on one hand, I understand, because the way the world is today, you need to learn those computer skills early.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's just a fact of the matter. But he made a point to me that has always stuck with me. And he said, look, those skills are important to learn, and they're going to need them someday because that's just the way the world is going. However, when you take a kid that's in kindergarten and you start teaching them all this stuff, you know, while they're trying to also learn to read and do, you know, basic math and, you know, learn to speak and all of this stuff, and you start teaching them also how to navigate a computer and how to, you know, do some basic coding or whatever it is they're doing at the young age, that's fine. They'll learn it. And but what it does, it messes things up because it's essentially like installing a, you know, 4-lane superhighway in their brain, which on the surface seems like a great idea until you realize that all they can really handle at that point is essentially a horse path. Mm-hmm. You know, the core information they need, the language skills, the reading, the writing, you know, simple things like that is what they can actually, not what they can handle, but what they need to build the foundation to be able to learn further in the future. And that's right. Kind of, you know, what I was, when I brought up the creative side, the technology as a whole, not just computers and the internet, but the fact that everything is right there, you know, be it a gaming system or, you know, kids today are so connected that they don't know what it means to be bored anymore. You know, for them, right. Boredom is, oh, I'm bored, you know, because I've been scrolling Facebook or, you know, well, kids aren't probably on Facebook much anymore, but, you know, Instagram or Snapchat, I've been doing this. I've been just scrolling mm-hmm. endlessly for hours playing Fortnite on my phone or whatever it is, and I'm bored. That's not boredom. That's still doing something.
Yep.
You know, when we were kids, if we were bored, it was because we were literally sitting in our room, pouring rain outside and looking around going, well, it's boring today. Yep. You know, what can we do?
You know, every kid is handed a tablet for the car ride or a phone.
Right.
I'm bored if they don't have something.
Right.
You know what? You've got a screen. Where? It's called the window.
Yeah.
Look out that. There's moving stuff. You can actually look out there. So the actual, let's see, which website am I on here? Oh, okay. So that study they had, at the end of the article about the study, mm-hmm. there is a recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics and their media guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And so their suggestions state children under 18 months, no screen time.
Wow.
Children 18 to 24 months, parents should choose only high quality media and watch it with their child.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first 2 years, don't let them watch anything unattended.
Yeah.
And then also for the next 3 years, for children 2 to 5 years old, less than 1 hour per day of high quality program is recommended with parents watching along.
Mm.
Always be there to watch.
Right.
You know, I don't see the recommendations listed here for beyond that, but you know, it's up to parents to use their own judgment.
Yeah.
You're the parent, you are in charge of that stuff. And if your kid, you know, doesn't like some of the rules, you are still the parent. They will still, they might hate it.
Yep.
And they might resent it, but, it's kind of like making them eat their vegetables, I guess.
Right.
Which can be really hard to do.
You know, the one thing that comes to mind for me, too, that's kind of a gray area. You want your kids reading. And one of the most popular ways to do that these days is, unfortunately, not with paper books anymore. I mean, I still love reading a paper book when I can. You know, I'll do it whenever I can. But I read way more on my Kindle.
But I think I'm kind of in that camp where I think if you're reading on a Kindle, you're still reading.
Right. And if you can lock it down so all they can do is the Kindle and not play games, I think that's all right.
Your brain is still processing the words and hearing the, you know, to actually create the story in your mind as you read.
Mm-hmm.
You're still doing that, no matter what device you're on.
Right.
I think there's a risk of obesity that I've read about. Just because if you're on your smartphone all day and you're addicted, you know, because the technology has an addictive piece to it.
Sure.
Where you need to be, you know, having a screen or things like that. And that goes for adults too. The more and more you're doing that and you're not doing any physical activity. Like I noticed in the summer, I'm asking my kids, go outside and play. Well, they're trying to watch TV. It's 75 and sunny outside.
Yeah.
I just grabbed the remote, shut it off. Like your shoes are by the door.
Yeah.
Go find adventure. Go out in the woods. Right. Go do something.
Yeah.
Gosh. And luckily I still have the authority to say that to him. But it's also, you know, what we're trying to do is create good habits and good discipline in like, oh, I know I need some fresh air and exercise today and not to just be on this.
Yep.
Now, if I could get that discipline for myself.
Well, that's the key, right? But that's really it. I mean, it's being able to, from a young age, help them develop that natural sense of curiosity, that natural sense of, I want to go explore. I want to have an adventure that doesn't just involve me staring at a screen.
Yep.
You know, it could be anything in the house, building forts, you know, whatever it
exactly.
is. Do something to exercise your brain.
And this is where, you know, this is where I fail. I feel I don't always set a good example.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just, that's just a fact. That's just reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got an Xbox One. And so sometimes I just want to sit and play a game. I work in technology. I'm a developer. I'm always on a screen. I'm always on a computer. Yeah. And a lot of times a kid will look at that and go, you know, you're being a hypocrite. You're on screens all the time. Why can't I?
Right.
Why can't I?
Yep.
You know, my answer is you will have plenty of time to be on screens if you go and once you hit the workforce or school,
right.
You know, and when you're out of the house, you're on your own for that stuff.
Right.
But
I know like even my youngest and I, we've been, he reads, you know, and he's in, I forget what he is, second grade, I think now, something like that. Terrible dad. I don't remember, but, he likes to read on his own and usually he'll read me cause he's always got to read for school. So every night he'll read his story to me. And then we've in the last, I don't know, few weeks to a month or so, I've decided, you know, rather than just reading the kids' books that he has, you know, he's kind of at that age where, you know, let's just start reading some bigger books, you know, fun fantasy or whatever it is, and just read a chapter a night or whatever as he's falling asleep.
Yep.
And so I'll lay down with him and I'll read to him on my Kindle. And right now we're reading the classic Call of the Wild, you know.
Jack London.
Yep, mainly because the new movie's coming out with Harrison Ford, and he saw the preview for that and wants to see the movie. And I said, well,
CGI Wolf.
Yeah. And it's like, I'll think about taking you there, but first we're going to read the book.
I like it.
You know, so we're doing that, but there are times when I'm laying down reading with him, my daughter is usually in her room. She'll be either finishing her homework or whatever else. And my wife, a lot of times that's when she'll sneak away and she'll call her mom and, you know, take care of that kind of stuff that she doesn't get to do earlier in the day. And if she writes me, you know, sends me a text or something like that, if I grab my phone while we're reading and look at it, he will instantly, and I love it. He's on top of me. He's like, hey, no phones while we're reading, you know, and he's got me putting it down. And
that's a good habit.
Yeah, I mean, it's good because it is easy. Oh. We forget as parents, too, like, what example are we setting?
So a really close friend of mine was doing a job interview, and as in giving the interview to somebody who was applying.
Oh, sure.
And this is maybe 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And he texted me and said, I just had a guy in the middle of the interview take out his phone to answer a text. Like, oh no.
Right.
Someone steered you the wrong way.
Yeah.
Like what in the world are you thinking? Needless to say, probably not the top candidate.
Right.
But I mean, it just, that kind of goes back to the habit of it. It's so habitual. And you know what? I was watching a TED talk once on, I think I was on etiquette and stuff. And he said, you know what? Taking your phone and placing it screen down on the table in front of you still doesn't make me feel like I'm the object of your focus.
Right. Because you still have to put the priority of that phone being in the room. You know, it's like, here.
So
here's my phone.
Here's a tip. If you're on a date, put the phone on silent, keep it in your pocket. Don't take it out.
Right.
But you know what? You still have to interact with humans. Yeah. Speaking of interacting with humans, I do want to take this conversation up to another scale here, which is, all this technology aside and all the stuff on screen time is one thing. But the social aspect is an entire different thing. There's a study out, overall increase in cyberbullying. Girls are 3 times more likely to be cyberbullied than boys.
Yeah.
And this is based on studies from the National Center for Educational Statistics.
That constant connectivity to your peers and kids at school. And you know, when you think about when we were kids, I was fortunate. I never got bullied much. I was a bigger kid, you know, size wise and stuff. So I was friendly, and I just found it easier to get along with people. But thankfully, never was in a position where I was bullied much at all. And you look at it now, though, like back then, if you were bullied, you got it during the hours of school or over recess or whatever. Now it's 24/7. These kids are hearing it.
Yep. And I had a bully that was in my friends group when I was in the fourth grade.
Okay.
That was tough because it was still like I couldn't escape.
Right.
You know, that was really tough for
me. So what do you mean? Someone bullying you that was in your friends group?
Yep.
Okay. So
one big group of friends, but one of them just had it out for me.
Yeah.
And nobody stood up for me. So, and I didn't stand up for myself, which, you know, looking back, you know, I was fourth grade.
Right.
I didn't want to fight.
Were you a bigger kid at that age?
No,
I mean, or were you?
No, I wouldn't say I was. I wasn't super athletic.
Sure.
And he was more athletic than me. And I was, you know, I'm a non-confrontational person.
Right.
So it was,
I am most of the time, but I remember even at a pretty young age, just a couple times when kids would kind of, I think it happened, you know, it happens when you get older and you start going to bars for the first time, you know, as people get drunk, there's always that little guy that'll look for the big guy and want to pick a fight, you know, it's small man syndrome. And it's the same with kids, I think, where the bullies are going to naturally look for the smaller kids. But every now and then you're going to get one of those kids that's maybe a little smaller, got a chip on their shoulder, and they're just going to be rude. You know, they're bullies is what they are, but they're not going to necessarily always just pick on the younger ones. They're going to try and find bigger kids they can push around because that makes them feel even more powerful.
Yep.
And I was always just like, I'm not confrontational, but I've always kind of been like, I'll smooth it over whenever I can through talking and, you know, whatever, talk my way out of it. I've always been a good talker, but the few times they'd push me, I also would only let it go so far. And I'd make it very clear that, no, that's not going to go down this way. And I remember how we used to have track and field day?
Yep.
And the whole school in the spring, you'd go out and you'd all compete in these little events. You know, you're probably fourth, fifth grade. And
yep.
There's one kid in my class. He was a pretty big kid. I mean, strong, and he was like farm strong. I mean, he wasn't like muscular, but he was big and strong and fast. And he was just, for weeks leading up to that, just coming after me a little bit, you know, barbs and saying stuff and kind of escalating it up a little bit more and more and more. And finally it came to a head on that track and field day. And I knew, I'm like, I'm not going to fight him because I was a big kid, but he was bigger. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't want to fight him, but how can I, you know, defuse this? So we lined up, we were doing some race, and I ran up behind him, and as hard as I could, I kicked him right square in the rear end. And I started laughing right away because I kicked him and I took off running. And as I took off running, I was just yelling, "I just kicked your butt," you know, as if we fought. And I, you know, I used the A word. I think I was too young to be using that, but he was chasing me all around, and I was laughing so hard the whole time, and it got him laughing, like, you know, "You're such a smart aleck." And we became good friends after, you know, eventually. Like, it just, it diffused it because it wasn't a fight. It wasn't like,
nice,
I hurt him, you know, but that's just kind of how I would deal with things. But, you know, now you look at these kids and it's constant, you know, if you're not hearing it in person, they're posting stuff about you online.
Yep. Yep,
they're trying to convince all of your friends to, you know, get in on it. And as we all know, everyone's a keyboard warrior.
It's, you know, cruel and nasty.
Yeah, it's so easy to say nasty stuff when you're hiding behind the internet.
And everybody's different. You know, my personality growing up, you know, with that bully, I never told anybody.
Yeah.
I never told anybody. And I didn't know how to react to it.
Yeah.
And finally, the next year, another one of my friends, a new friend when after the schools merged,
yeah,
who was smaller than all of us, but would scrap hands down, like dangerous. he went up to this other bully who was, you know, still technically my friend on paper.
Yeah.
And he said, "You ever touch him, I'm going to kill you." it all ended there.
Right.
Cause he wasn't having any of it. Cause I was just trying to be a nice kid. I didn't know how to handle that stuff.
Yeah.
And so when a child doesn't know how to handle, you know, bullying and stuff like that, and they're afraid to talk about it. They just sit there and right. take it. And the problem with online bullying is that it's 24/7.
Right.
And you can't escape from it and go home.
Well, yeah.
And that's really, really tough. And so there is a risk, you know, people getting on social media of, you know, especially kids getting on social media. There's that big risk of cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's happening even though they're not on social media and people are talking smack. You
right.
know what I mean?
So all their friends are seeing it yep. all day long.
So and so said this and this on Instagram about you. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not on Instagram. You know, it's right. like,
it just becomes one more thing they can pick on them for.
Exactly. So how do you protect your child against, you know, that stuff? And really it's, you'd have to have screenshots or evidence and bring it either to the school or, you know, confront the parents. And unfortunately, some parents don't give a crap.
Right.
You know, as
well, and sadly, so, a lot of times the school isn't really going to be able to do much either, because unless it happens while they're at school, you know, there's not much right. they can do either. Law enforcement can.
Yep. Well, if they're referring to something that was at school, maybe I have no idea.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's just kind of.
It's yeah. one of those things. I mean, my kids are right now at that age where, you know, especially my oldest, she's at that age where you're starting to see the cliques and, you know, the girls, and it seems more common with girls. I mean, I'm sure it happens with boys just as much, but it seems like boys are still more likely to get into a dust up on the playground than girls will. It'll be, you know,
yep. Well, more often than not, girls use their words as their weapons.
Exactly. And so,
this is the theory of the author of this article too.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, guys generally, you know, they're going to have something physical. My yep. bullying was physical. It was push me over, grab my lunch, smash it, kind of physical.
So you grew to love smashed peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
Yep. And now you look at it and think, man, they sell peanut butter and jelly bites at the store and everyone loves them.
Now I look at it and I go, if I had a time machine, I'd go back and I would authorize myself to use force.
Yeah, right.
Because I thought I would get in trouble if I ever did anything.
Right.
But how do you combat words and stuff like that? And so that's a really good question. Now, connectsafely.org is the United States kind of safer Internet Day website, which has a lot of resources for parents, specifically about, you know, dealing with, you know, sexting, cyberbullying, Roblox, things like that, where yeah. it's, you know, hate speech, stuff like that. They've got all these little guides and resources here to assist with some of those things, some nice little PDF files. So I'll have to put a link to this in the show notes. It's called connectsafely.org.
Yeah.
And
if you could, because you've kind of been looking at a couple different articles there for some research here, right?
Yep.
You want to
include all those articles.
Yeah. Stick all of those links. We'll just stick them right under the main topic there in the show notes, because I didn't look at any of it. I just kind of been flying by the seat of my pants, I guess you'd say, just going from personal experience and listening, because I knew you'd done some research there, and it'd be good to see all of that information for people who want to look at it, because, you know, like we said, it's a big topic that we have just barely scratched the surface on.
Well, and there's so much to it, and yep. we at Digital Soup, we're not experts in this.
Yeah, we're not,
but we're parents like any of you guys that are parents, yeah. and we're trying to navigate this stuff with our kids, mm-hmm. and we have the same worries. You know, nobody wants their child to be subjected to cyberbullying. They don't mm-hmm. want them to be subjected to, you know, some creep out there on the internet. And we want to make sure that their brains are developing properly and that they have a good right. understanding of the world.
Well, let me ask you
how
this.
How do we do it? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, because we have, you know, when we talk about the impact of technology on kids, it's by and large been a lot of stuff that as parents terrifies us and is kind of crappy for kids today. You know, they don't feel that way, but we look at it going, oh man, I would never want to deal with this. And it's terrifying for us that our kids are going to have to go through it. Given that, there are benefits, you know, as well. Let's end on a positive note. And what's, you know, one thing, like when you look at technology today with our kids, that we can look at and say, man, it truly does make life better.
Ooh, technology with kids that makes life better?
Mm-hmm.
So remember, in my opinion, A lot of streaming services.
Uh-huh.
Remember as kids where you'd have to wait until, you know, Saturday morning to watch a cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Or you'd have to be, you know, you'd have to miss something.
Mm-hmm.
The streaming services makes it all go away.
Right.
But honestly, the educational part of it is huge.
Yeah.
Plus, I think some of the ability to communicate across the world, especially with distant family that you might not have been able to do before.
Right.
It's just out of this world.
That's what I was going to lean towards.
Yeah. There's so much good. It's all what you make of it. It's all how you use it and how you allow it to be used.
Well, and I look at it, you know, when you think of kind of making the world, would it be making the world smaller, I guess, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
If I'm thinking of that right, where when we were growing up, I mean, I remember our family had a cabin that was from where I live now, or even from where I grew up, you know, it's 45 minutes away, maybe an hour drive tops, because there were some small back roads and dirt roads, you know. And yep. I remember if we were going to go down to the cabin, the family cabin, it was like an all-day affair to get there. Pack up and drive. It took hours and hours. If you know, just weird. And now that where that cabin is, I cruise by on the way to somewhere twice as far away that we go to, you know, once or twice a month, and it's an hour and a half drive.
Resilience to the length of trips is what you're getting at. I like
yeah,
it.
But yeah, and it's like it just the idea though that, you know, as a kid, everything seems like, you know, growing up for us, everything seems so far away. Like, oh man, like where we're at here, Duluth, Minnesota is, you know, where we both grew up. It's about an hour and a half away, give or take.
Yep.
And that, you know, if you thought about as a kid, like, oh, maybe we can go to Duluth this year because that was a big trip.
Oh, yeah.
Now big I look, trip. You know, I look at my kids and, you know, it's if we have a rare Saturday where we have nothing going on and it's bad weather, they're like, let's go down to Duluth and just go shopping and, you know, hang out in the mall, or let's go to the trampoline park or this and that. To them, they think nothing of it. It's an hour away, no big deal.
And that's also, I think part of that too is because our parents never took the long trips,
right?
Except very rarely, and we're kind of getting them accustomed to it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because my kids' trip to their grandparents is an hour and a half.
Yeah,
you know, hour and 15 to get to grandma's.
Right,
and it's, you know, they just kind of go with it.
Yeah, well, and for me growing up, I had one set of grandparents that was 14 miles away, so not even a half hour, and the other set was about 25 miles away, so maybe a half hour drive. If we were going to go to the grandparents' place, that was you would have swore we were taking a major expedition. Bundle up, we're going to make a day of it. You know, now it's like I run out to my parents like, oh, after work, oh, I got to go bring this thing out there. I just did a book for my parents from our fishing trip last summer. I put a book of photos together.
You told me about that.
And when it came in, I wanted to get it out to them because I knew I wouldn't see them over the weekend. So when it came in late last week, I got off work, came home, changed, ran out, dropped it off, said, all right, see you later. Enjoy this. This is your book. Oh, okay, cool. And they looked at it and I left. And I was home and, you know, there and back within hour and 10 minutes at most.
A hobbit's tale.
Yeah. And it's just nothing. And I think that's, you know, not even that, but, you know, like we said, with Wikipedia, you have to be careful of the information, but just the way we can, you know, our kids today can really get to see other cultures, other things like that, you know, in a good way.
Yeah, you know, educational across the board.
Exactly. Where, you know, we were limited to photos in Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yep. Another use, you think about heading to YouTube for a how-to video and doing something physical. How do I cut this? How do I make this joint in wood joinery? Mm-hmm. How do I fix a washing machine?
Yeah.
You know, teaching your kids to use it for those kind of things that there's a resource is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, technology is great. It's also good to have a backup plan in the form of a paper book. But because sometimes you won't have internet and you still need answers.
Exactly.
So we don't have any, of course, you know, official Digital Soup parenting advice. Although,
no.
I apologize if I came off sounding like I was standing on a soapbox on this stuff.
No,
I don't have all the answers. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not anything. I'm a parent concerned just like everybody else, just like you are, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all trying to navigate, like I said, how do we handle the technology of our kids?
Oh, man.
And just being engaged is one of the biggest things, and be able to talk to your kids.
Exactly. Like we said. Stay engaged. You know, make sure they understand. They,
careful, girls. He's engaged. I just watched that thing you do. Yep. Exactly.
But no, though, I just had a brilliant idea.
Let's hear it.
For a new line of merch for Digital Soup, all right? Something we've long thought about doing, some kind of merch for Digital Soup. Now, if you look at our numbers, most of our listeners are predominantly male, right?
Okay.
Many of which are our age, middle age or so. Most have kids.
Super young.
What if we came out with some kind of t-shirt design that we called the Digital Soup Dads?
I like it. How do we do this? We'll have to talk offline.
Yeah, we'll figure out some design. Listeners, if you guys would be interested, I don't know, maybe we'll use Sticker Mule, get some stickers made up or
put it on
a t-shirt
car.
Or something like that. I don't know. Digital Soup Dad.
Yep. Imperfect and ready to go.
That's right.
I don't know about the ready to go part. I don't know.
Well, you know, that could be taken the wrong way, I suppose.
Yeah, totally. We're ready to go. We got dad bods.
Yeah.
And recommendations on apps.
That's our new fitness app we're working on where we're going to try and get in shape again.
Fitting this whole burger in my mouth.
The Bobby Flay burger.
Oh, it was glorious.
You never did say what, I know you told me offline, but you never did say what were the standout burgers you guys tried?
So I had the black and blue, you know, bacon and blue cheese burger.
Sure. Which
not everybody's a blue cheese fan. I get it.
Yeah.
The wife tried the sunrise burger, you know, with had a fried egg and bacon on it. Out of this world.
Yeah.
Just good stuff. I don't know. It's just the seasoning, the quality of the meat. You know, they didn't overcook it. Even well done, had a slight pink to it, but it was just perfect.
Sure. Now, you were with another couple. Did they eat there also with you guys?
Yep.
So what did they get?
Oh, one got the same bacon and egg burger.
Okay.
And I can't recall what the other one had.
You ever had a burger with peanut butter on it?
Yes, the Elvis.
Is that what it's called? I don't know, but it was delicious.
That's, it's phenomenal. It's strange.
Yeah.
Listeners, trust me on this.
Yeah. See, I can't
You got to try it at one time.
Yeah. Now the breakfast burger, as I always call it, with the bacon and egg and everything.
Yep.
They're delicious, but I can't eat them anymore.
No?
Because they'll kill you if you eat too many of them. But, last time I ate it, this was probably 8 years ago, enjoyed a amazing breakfast burger like that. And as I got home that evening and over the course of the night, came down with the flu.
Oh, no.
And, it came back out. Ever since then, I think of that night spending it hovering over the toilet going, oh, I'm never eating that again. That and fried green beans, deep fried green beans, something I tried that night for first time and was like, oh, those are pretty good. Interesting,
no,
a little different.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they were not as good coming back up. So.
Oh, well, with that, listeners, it's time to put the lid on this fried bean soup. So be sure to head on over to our website, digitalsouppodcast.com, for all of our links to everything that you can possibly imagine that we could have on Digital Soup.
Including that Patreon.
You got it. So, of course, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not subscribed yet, be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening to and leave a 5-star review. That'd be fantastic. Of course, you can hit us up on Twitter at Digital Soup Cast. And as Dave said, if you like what you hear and want to leave a tip, we're going to have a link to our Patreon page, both on our website and in the show notes. Again, all the stuff that we talk about in this episode is in the show notes. So don't just listen to the audio. You can actually click the links and look for yourself. wink, wink. I'm adding that in for a special listener.
You know who you are.
Yep. I think he'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, from all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, all of you guys have an awesome week, and we'll catch you later.
Take care, guys.